This is the Smallmouth Crush Podcast. If you're a hardcore angler, you've come to the right place. This is a weekly podcast that will interview some of the top smallmouth bass anglers in North America. Travis and his guest will discuss what it takes to consistently catch big smallmouth, and you'll get a glimpse inside the mind of a trophy smallmouth angler. And now, here's your host of the Smallmouth Crush Podcast, Travis Manson.
Hello, welcome to the Smallmouth Crush Podcast. My name is Travis Manson. Here we are talking smallmouth, top smallmouth bass anglers in North America from all over the place. Although the Great Lakes, of course, a lot of good sticks, a lot of good anglers come from that part of the country, just because, I mean, that's like smallmouth capital of the world. Legit studs live in the Great Lakes. And we got a legit angler coming up that's going to join us shortly. But before we go there, let's talk, of course, about the Real Shot. The Real Shot is quickly becoming the go-to shop for bass anglers across the country. They have a vast selection of some of the most sought-after brands in fishing. Some of the hard-to-find brands out there. Megabass, Damiki, Yozuri, Evergreen. You name it. Shimano, Dirty Jigs, Kitex, St. Croix rods, all kinds of rods, reels. They got it all. If you head on over to their website, therealshot.com, and enter code SmallmouthCrush15 at checkout, they're going to give you 15% off your first order. So pretty cool deal, and we certainly appreciate The Real Shot. And every time you head on over there and support the story, you support this podcast and the YouTube channel, Smallmouth Crush. I want to welcome the viewers on the YouTube channel as well as the listeners out there in podcast land. Certainly appreciate the support. It's been an awesome season doing this. A lot of great information. I hope you guys have your notebook ready for this one, because it's probably going to be mind-blowing, just like all the others. So I'm super excited. Without further ado, I'll stop babbling. Let's just bring our next guest on. And there he is. Larry, how are you doing?
That's bad, Travis. How you doing?
Man, I can't complain. We're talking big smallmouth. You know how to put a few of those in the boats over the years. And I really want to get into it because, you know, we're on a little time frame here. When you start talking fishing and smallmouth, we could talk for hours and hours, you know, fish fish stories and all that. But I really want to get into, you know, what makes you so successful when it comes to chasing smallmouth. But before we go there, Larry, can you give us a little background on yourself and kind of the area you're living now and some of the different fishing, you know, experiences that you currently have and what your plans are for the future?
Well, I mean, I got started fishing with my grandfather, you know, when I was like 15, 16 years old. Never would go out every weekend, never catch nothing, you know, go out, maybe catch a bullhead here or there. So then he passed away. And then, you know, I was 16 years old. And I started working in a restaurant and I love fishing. And I met one of my best friends now, Pete. And he's like, "Oh, you love fishing?" I'm like, "Oh yeah." He's like, "Dude, we go pond fishing. Let's go pond fishing." So then we went out through a rubber worm, Texas rig rubber worm and pond, and just pounded bass. And I'm like, this is it.
Yeah. Right.
You know, now what do I got to do? I got to get a boat, you know? So after we mastered all the ponds around here, I'm like, I need to get a boat. So me and him bought a boat. It was like this 1967 Starcraft. We put a trolling motor on there. We showed up to our first tournament. Somebody's like, "You guys have a fish tournament." We didn't have a live well, so we made one out of a cooler. And we roll up to Chautauqua Lake and we parked at the dock with this 1967 Starcraft boat and we're signing up. We don't know what to do. And there's all these guys with their fancy bass boats. And then we go up to this guy and we're like, "Well, when do you go? When can we leave?" You know? And the guy's like, he looks over. He's like, "That's your boat?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "You guys could go now." I'm like, "Cool." You know? So we leave. Then my other buddies that got us into it, they're like, one guy's like, "Dude, where are your buddies going?" He's like, "I don't know." He goes, "Well, they're disqualified." So after like 3 hours of, we didn't know. So after like 3 hours of fishing, we caught like one 12-inch largemouth that's in this cooler swimming around. It's 95 degrees outside. We're at Long Point State Park eating ice cream. Let this fish go. Trolling motor starts smoking. We're like, "Okay.
Oh, man."
We're done with this. And then, you know, got a new boat, bass boat, and the rest is history.
Wow. Yeah. What a start. I mean,
yeah. Then I'm like, "Well, you know, I never went co-angler. I just, I couldn't, I did one time when the elites were around. And so you could go with somebody, and that's the only way that you could help them. Mm-hmm. So somebody paid for me to go with them on Erie so I can show them the ropes. Sure. But that was a nightmare, you know, but I've never went co-angler. I just, you know, which stubborn on my part, you know, so you wasted a lot of money doing that because you don't learn a lot of stuff when you just think you know it all, you know, mm-hmm. head over. I mean, in my first tournament I did was down at Potomac River. I was there for 7 days. I might've caught 3 fish. Didn't know nothing about no tidal water and never caught a fish. Then the Bassmaster schedule came out and it was Potomac River, the opens, Potomac River, Lake Erie. And I'm like, out of Buffalo, perfect. And I don't know, somewhere else. So I'm like, all right. I go, I'm just going to pay and not even go to the Potomac River because I never caught anything there.
Right.
So I go out there and I found an area. I'm like, well, I'm catching some good fish here, you know? So I'm like, well, we'll see what happens. And I go, I'll probably have this all myself. So I pull in this creek and there's, you know, out of 240 boats that were in this open, I think 150 were in this creek. I'm like, oh, this. But I had one little deal that I figured out. So after the first day, I had 18 some pounds. Then the next day, I had almost 18 pounds again. So I was in like 14th. Then I was in like third, you know, and this is like huge tournament. And, mm-hmm. you know, I ended up, I think, 17th in that, you know, because my fish ran out, wind blew. And then I, you know, you don't know what to do back then,
yeah. Yeah.
you know. So then it's just, and then my home water one, I'm like, awesome. I'm on them. I'm running far. Motor blows.
Jeez.
But it's, you know. I live and breathe smallmouth. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love catching largemouth. People are like, "Oh, you don't ever catch largemouth." I'm like, "Oh, I catch largemouth, but you know, if they're smallmouth, I'm going after them."
Sure. So you've had some pretty good success fishing tournaments. A lot of it, of course, Lake Erie. We're talking your home body of water. I guess we would call that. I mean, how far away are you from the launch?
20 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm out there, you know, 3-4 times a week. Me and my stepson fish Wednesday night tournaments. And because, you know, he loves it and he's getting older now and he wants to fish tournaments. So I'll be like, we, you know, instead of me, he just goes with me and he catches him because he's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, and that we get to the point of, you know, you tell me where you want to go. So he understands that it's not, well, I just go with Larry and we catch him, you know. No, you tell me where you want to go, you know? Yeah. So I introduced him into this lure called, you know, the Alabama rig, mm-hmm. and that's all he wants to throw.
Really? He's hooked. He's hooked.
I'm hooked. If I could go fishing anywhere and bring one rod, I'd bring the A-rig.
Come on.
Anywhere.
We're going to have to really get into this then, because that's interesting. That's interesting. Don, do you have experience or do you still fish outside of that zone? Do you still compete around the country? Oh,
yeah. Yeah, so I do the Bassmaster Opens, and like a couple of years ago, I finished fifth in the Costa Series on Oneida. I finished fifth in the Bassmasters back-to-back on Oneida. And, well, of course, Bassmaster can't throw the Alabama rig, mm-hmm. you know, so, but that was on Oneida Lake. I won the Costa Series on Lake Erie, my home water. I do a lot of Thousand Islands, a lot of team events, you know. Lately, I've been doing a bunch of team events and catching really great bags, but just coming in second for some reason, you know.
Yeah.
You know? Like last fall, I had 21-7, 22 wins, you know. Mm-hmm. This fall, I had 19-5-6 and 19-6-7 wins. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. you know, I have 27, some almost 28 pounds of smallmouth on Lake Erie. And
stack in place. 29 pounds. Right.
But it is what it is. I mean, I guess I'll take seconds.
I feel your pain. You know what? It's as good as an angler can be, regardless of what tournament you're fishing, whether it be a team event, whether it be an open, it's hard to win. It's, you know, you would think being out there on the water every day, every other day, being dialed in, it would be easier. But there's so many
really hard
things.
It's really hard to win now. You know, like I fish a lot of tournaments on Erie and stuff, and people are like, well, you know, why are you fishing? You know, you shouldn't be fishing this. I'm not guaranteed to win. It's, I mean, especially with the electronics and stuff that's out there. I mean, people are finding stuff that you knew when there was no, you know, 3D imaging and front facing sonar and stuff. Exactly. And now, you know, you're like, I'm running my secret spot. Well, there's a boat out there.
Sure. Yeah.
Yep. As you know what I mean? Yep. You know, and all the information, there's a lot more people doing it. But the electronics is, you know, which I have an issue with. The Alabama rig is banned. Oh, it's because you just throw it out and you catch them. It don't work that way. You know, I fished that Costa Series. I had a kid get in my boat and he's like, Now I'm a pretty good smallmouth fisherman. I says, cool. He goes, I got the baits that they're going to eat. I says, oh, that's cool. You know, I go, I know what I'm doing, but I got plenty of stuff if you need it. He's like, no, I'm not going to need nothing. I got what they got. I said, all right. So I get up on my front of the boat. We hit our first spot, and I just start hauling the A-rig around. And I'm just lighting them up one after another. Another boat pulls in. So now they tie on their A-rigs. But it ain't just tie on and catch. Because I lit up almost 70-some fish. My co-angler waited none. Never caught a fish.
Whoa.
The boat behind me, both him and his partner, never caught a fish. After like 2 hours, he came up to me. He's like, I don't know what you're doing. He goes, I know you're throwing an A-rig. He goes, but I'll just leave this spot to you. I'm like, well, it was my spot. But goodness, you just pulled in at me. But that's cool. Thanks. You know? But you just don't throw it out and reel it in. But they're like, you know, it's banned and you can't do this. It's cheating. It's not. You know, what about the $15,000 or $20,000 worth of electronics or, you know, the flogger? I'm going to search down in this traffic cone and use an ice fishing rod to catch these fish that are on beds in 15 foot of water. You know, that's more cheating than hauling around a lure. But I mean, like I said, if I could go out with one rod, that's what I throw.
Wow. Okay. So let's just get into it because like I said, we don't have a whole lot of time, but I got to really pick your brain here when it comes to the Alabama rig. For people that may not be aware,
I'm a good finesse fisherman. I mean, I love drop shotting. That's my cup of tea. I love drop shotting, finesse fishing, video game fishing, finding them. You know, I'm not a caster and just aimlessly come across them. You know, I want to find them, drop on them, and trigger them to bite. You know, I mean, I've had 28 pound bags for five in the Thousand Islands, 28, 29 pound bags for five on Erie, St. Clair, 25 pound bags, you know, so I can do the finesse.
A little
stuff,
finesse fishing as well. So that's good. I mean, a well-rounded angler being able to catch them, finesse fishing, power fishing. You know, the A-rig's been very popular. It's been around for quite a while now, but guys have thrown it. Guys have stopped throwing it. Guys started throwing it, experimenting with different ways. It sounds like you have it really dialed in. Basically, it's just resembles a school of bait, depending on what type of, plastic and trailer you want to put on, whether it be shad or bait fish, perch, whatever you can imitate with that. And it's a very powerful tool when done right, when put in the right hands at the right time, right place. And I think what we're going to learn here in this podcast is it's a bait that maybe we should utilize a little bit more often. Maybe there's some opportunities that we're not thinking about. And so
I don't want to tell anybody to use it. No,
right, right. No, I get it. So let's start out with this. What would be, I guess, did you get on the craze years ago when it first came out? Is that how you got introduced to the A-rig?
After my buddy finished second on the Costa Series Championship, well, it ever started at the time in Kentucky Lake, he's like, man, I was practiced the whole time, never caught a fish, but they were schooling. And then this thing came out. So he stood in line and got one, finished second, almost won the thing. So I'm like, dude, pick me up four of them. So then I brought him back and I'm like, spring, you know, winter's here. So springtime, I go out to Oneida. I'm a good friend of mine, Ian, that now builds them.
Yep.
Is like, I'm like, you know, check this out. Really? What do you got there? I go, I'm going to light them up here on Oneida, you know? So I start throwing it around, you know, we never caught, you know, you weren't dialed in, you know, you just bought the ones in the package and we started using it and we caught a few fish, but we just weren't in tune to it. Then started making them with a little heavier wire, you know, that you got to have light wire so it flares stuff. You don't need, I mean, smallmouth, you catch one smallmouth, he comes in and destroys the thing. Arms are busting off in that. So we made it with a little bit thicker wire, nice epoxy resin head, you know, better hardware, you know, the split rings, the snaps, you know, you know, people spend $20 on an A-rig, you know, and then they got to redo it all. You know, with better hardware or your snaps are breaking and stuff. And, you know, in tournaments, you can't have any of that stuff. So, you know, we just have, you know, like the Brown Dog Tackle A-rig like this here, you know, there's a finesse and a junior. And I mean, it can take a beating. I probably caught on this rig right here. I probably caught 100 smallmouth on the Erie with this. Mm-hmm. And those are tanks. Mm-hmm. Those ain't just like 1.5, 2 pounders.
Yeah.
And we started to really throw it and learn how to reel it, what to do with the rod. First started with braid. Braid's a no-no. Because when you set the hook on them and a heavy rod, you tear a hole in them. Then they jump, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So now I use 20-pound fluorocarbon, a little bit more of a forgiving rod when you do set the hook on it. Because I have to set the hook. If you see me drop shot,
sure.
I set the hook like it's a jig.
So I want to get into different applications and where you're throwing it, but I think we need to get our equipment dialed in first. So you made a couple of good points here. So you're throwing it. I agree. I use fluorocarbon as well. I used to do braid. And then just through some people that I know well that fish it, their recommendations. And, I wasn't a strong A-rig angler. I mean, I use it when I seem to pull it out when a typical angler would throw it, colder water, fall, schooling fish, bait fish, and I've done very well on it, but I haven't used it maybe to the extent that you have in different applications. So taking notes here, I'm definitely going to stick with the 20-pound fluorocarbon theory. A lighter rod, so it may be, and every brand rod's different, we know that. So you really, I guess, have to really get a feel for that rod and see if it works. I mean, are you going to use something in that 7.5-foot range?
I use a 7.7 IMX Pro Loomis rod.
Okay.
It's 2 to 6 ounces you bait, but it has a nice flexible tip on it. And, people are like, well, you don't really need to spend that kind of money. You don't have to spend that kind of money. But the way I use it and the way I can feel a fish tap it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that rod makes the difference.
Absolutely.
You can use, a $99 tree trunk, 8-foot tree trunk, whipping it out there, reeled in. When he crushes it, you got one. I'll feel as I'm reeling it and I'll feel one bump it. I'm like, oh, one just bumped it. And I'll pop that rod tip. Wait a second. Flare that reel. Start reeling it. Boom. They mm-hmm. triggers them to bite it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those rods, you might not feel them coming wagging. I can tell if a walleye hits it. Oh, I got a walleye. Largemouth hits it. Largemouth is great. Because he comes up to it and he's like, oh, what is that? Just mm-hmm. taps it. He doesn't, a smallmouth is just like, boom, I want that thing. I'm taking all five,
Yes.
But sometimes, if the water's colder or something or stained, they might swim up to it and they might just bump it. Then you can feel that with your equipment.
Mm-hmm. How about reels? As far as there a particular gear ratio?
I use a 7.3:1 because I like it a little bit slower, but when I get them on, I want to get them in. I tried using an 8. I just thought it was a little too fast.
Okay. I like my theory is with a lot of reaction baits and things like that, I like the highest ratio they have to offer. So I do use the higher 8s, but I just want to make a point that you have to be pretty intimate with that reel and understand, and maybe I'm fooling myself, but I like to believe I can slow it down to where I need to. Is that a good theory?
I've tried that because I have 2 of the same rods with 1 a higher speed reel.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't.
Really?
And I let my stepson use it and I use it. And, he mimics me. He does what I tell him. He's a great mm-hmm. learner. And he just wouldn't catch the fish. I switch him up, the same reel, same everything. He works it. He lights them up.
All right.
Every time we go out there, he's like, we're like, we're going to throw the drop shot in first, we're in some deeper water now. Yeah, let's go shallow and throw the A-rig,
Yeah.
It's hard to, because there's nothing like it.
Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try that this year. I'm going to just go a little bit lower on the gear ratio.
Well, especially with blades. Now, if you have blades on your A-rig, I only want a number 3.
Blade. All right. This is getting way too already. I can see this is going to get very technical. Okay. All right. Before we get
you'll know what I mean. If you get an A-rig that's got 3s or one that has a little bit bigger, 3.5, when you throw that out there and you start reeling it in, mm-hmm. it feels like you're pulling a bucket of water through the
right
as opposed to it coming through the water.
Okay.
There's a lot of draft.
All right. So we got the setup. We got the rod. We got the reel. We got the line. Now I need to know, before we get into the actual conglomeration of an A-rig, when are you throwing this bait? Are you throwing it from ice out to ice up year round?
Once my boat goes in the water to once I pull it out.
Year round.
Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, people are like, well, the A-rig is known for rough water, cloudy. It's got to be, you know, miserable conditions. Well, the Costa that I finished fifth in on on Oneida, 90 degrees flat calm. There's a mercury ad. They took a picture of me and put me in the mercury ad, and it showed it's dead flat calm, and it's got me hauling the A-rig out there, and it's dead calm, sunny. I smoke them on it.
Okay.
Good. And sometimes I find myself, okay, it's rough. It's going to be great. Which was the third day of the Costa, rough. I only had four fish.
Whoa.
Yeah. East wind though on Oneida, which is not good there. But regardless, we started making an A-rig for the east wind and rougher water.
Oh, man. This is going to be good. Okay. Year round. There's so many different scenarios. It's going to be really hard to drill you on this, but give us a couple ideas when, or conditions that we're going to experience out there, that you would be throwing an Alabama rig. I guess let's start with depth. If you have fish that are in deep water that are down deep, are you going to try to target them with an A-rig, or is that not an option?
Like if I fish deep water, I love fishing deep. Mm-hmm. Like if people are like, oh, I saw you in there flipping those reeds. I'm like, dude, you didn't see me in there flipping those reeds. If my boat's in there, I broke down and blew in there.
Uh-huh, you know? Right, right.
That ain't me. You know, I'm in, you know, shallow water. Me might be 10 foot of water. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'll fish the outside grasslands. I love it as a surge bait too, because if there's a fish, if the fish are there, they're eating it or they're chasing it. Mm-hmm. So at least I'll know I can cover, you know, you can cast it a mile. You can cover so much water. If there's a smallie in that area, he's chasing it in.
Uh-huh.
So now you say he doesn't eat it for some reason, or you start seeing some school, you're like, okay, well, I know these fish are here, right? So now you got, you know, it's a great search bait. Deep water fishing, like 40, 50, 60 foot of water, I'll use it. So you get some real rough water on the Great Lakes. Then that thermocline will move up, and you'll see it in, like, say, 20 foot of water. People have all these expensive graphs, and they're like, oh, I just got interference in that 20 foot of water. No, you don't. Them fish are at that thermal, that water mixes up. You got that thermocline. Them fish are there. I'll throw it in 50 foot of water, count it down, and bring it right through 20, 25 foot of water and target them suspended fish. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tried throwing it, dragging it on the bottom. You lose $50 every time because it gets snagged in rocks and it just doesn't work, you know? So I target the deeper water. You know, we'll fish the drop shot and stuff like that. Sometimes on the Great Lakes, then if it's real dead calm, them fish will come up. So I always have it on my deck. You know, you might get a fish chase some bait up. I'm like, oh, there he is. You know, reeling the drop shot, whip out that A-rig, catch, you know, them fish that are coming up chasing bait. But, you know, I like to find rock piles, just isolated rock piles. Target them on my Lowrance, mark them, and then just cast towards them and bring it through the rock. Mm-hmm. Any grass rock mixtures. I don't throw it in thick weeds and stuff. Nothing like that.
Yeah. So shallow water approach, when you're throwing an A-rig up fairly shallow, I guess, do you get up there and, you know, on these big flats and areas where these smallmouth are roaming, even in the dead of summer, is that a bait you're going to throw?
Without doubt. Yep, I'll throw it all summer long. And I mean, it's just, it will trigger the biggest fish in that area to bite, hands down. I mean, I've caught 7-pound smallie, 7.5-pound smallmouth, numerous 6-pound smallmouth, where as opposed to I've been fishing, you know, drop shotting, and in a couple of years, I haven't had a 7-pounder. Mm-hmm. You know, it will trigger the bigger smallmouth. You might go out and you might only catch, you ain't gonna light it up. You know, like the last tournament we fished, that team event, I caught 15 smallmouth on that, on Oneida, on the A-rig all day, almost 20 pounds. They're big fish. You know, it's a big fish bait. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to do like, if, especially if you get an area where you have a lot of fish, and they usually, you longer cast is the best. And you usually get that two cranks and you set the hook on one, bites it and he comes up. Once he drops, I let him go right to the bottom. I stop reeling. It triggers the other fish, because you always, when you're reeling them in, they're coming in after it. So I let it come down. And then once he goes down, I wait a couple seconds. Then I start reeling on him again. Then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this is heavy. Jeez.
Are you doing that in a tournament, or when you just want to have a little fun? Come on.
No. Oh, yeah. I've gotten yelled at by my partner. Stop using 3-pounders to catch other fish. I'm like, well, they're down there.
Yeah. All right. Well, that clarifies it. So if it's like a giant jump in that 5-pounder, you ain't letting them swim back down.
No. That last tournament, and it's hard to really – they all feel huge, especially like if you catch suspended fish on Erie. That last tournament, we had 28 pounds in. That big fish I had was 7'2" Niners, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. He came up, jumped 2 foot out of the water, got wrapped up in it, which is nice.
Yep.
Now he's pinned. And in 3 footers, I just reeled him as fast as I can on top of the water. He can't do anything.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, so he can't shake around because he's got a hook here. He's got one over here. Mm-hmm. So he's just coming in like that, which is cool. You know, chances of losing him are. So yeah, I'm not letting him go down.
I got you. All right. That makes sense. So, okay. Let's talk about the A-rig itself. I want to know some of the A-rigs you've tried in the past, what you liked, what you didn't like about them. You know, you mentioned Brown Dog Tackle. I own a few of those as well. What are your thoughts on the whole different brands that are out there? Which ones do you recommend?
Well, I mean, I use that because we kind of grew up doing it together, you know, and he just, you know, there's so much time and detail that's gone into us and all the hardware, you know, you can buy some, you know, the umbrellas and stuff like that guy that I fished at one tournament. He threw the umbrella. He's like, dude, you can just use one of my A-rigs. It's fine. I got it all set up here. You can just tie it on. Nah, it's the same thing as yours. I'm like, well, I got 2-inch little baits on here. You're throwing 5-inch big white, whatever you're throwing on this thing. It's not the same. No blades. Oh, it's the same. I'm like, okay, cool. Well, you weighed nothing. And I smashed them, you know? Yeah. So it's all about the hardware. I mean, they'll all work, but are you going to spend $20 on a lure and maybe catch 3 or 4 fish on it and the arms break off? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And I solely believe it's how you work the lure. You don't just throw it out and reel it in. Yeah. A lot of people are, I ain't throwing that thing. It's to throw that thing all day, my arm be killing me. And I mean, I'll throw it all day. I have 3 A-rig rods in my boat. If I can go out there all day long and throw it, that's all I'm going to use. I have so much confidence in it, and I catch them on it.
Right. Whoa. Okay. So Brown Dog Tackle, that's the A-rig brand of choice then is what I'm hearing. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they got he makes them for.
Yeah. How many options, how many different styles do they sell, and then could you walk us through, let's say someone's listening right now and they want to become a better Alabama rig angler.
Okay.
Where do they start?
It's you get your setup, your rod, your reel. I like to throw 5, but if the BFL or any of the other tournaments that you're doing, you can only use 3 hooks.
Okay.
Well, he makes one like this particular bait here. It's got the 3 long arms.
Yep.
And then the 2 top ones are shorter.
Okay.
With the screw locks.
So that's going to be used for bodies of water where state regulations only allow you to have 3 hooks.
Right. Or tournaments will only allow you to have 3 hooks. Right. So you'll put 3 here, which I like to always downsize my dummies. So okay. I'll use a 3-3 or 3-8 and then put a 2.8 on top. I mean, you still want to have that the bigger school of fish coming through, you know, so you want so much action going on and it's going to trigger them to bite, you know, the bottom 2 or the ones that have the hooks on them. So they can't get to the smaller ones.
Okay.
Then they have, he has the finesse one, which is, you know, the arms are like 4 inches you know, that's got five of them on there.
Could the finesse one, does he also make it where it would be three hook regulation style? Yes. Or do you? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he makes it the same way. Now, I mean, I'll throw the finesse mainly when in the springtime and, you know, early summer for with small baits. When all the bait's tiny, I'll use little 2-inch baits, 1¾-inch baits.
Okay.
You know, I like to run my rig with three of the hooks, the top two in the middle, 3/16, and the bottom 2/4. So it doesn't spin. Mm-hmm. It's always running the same direction. Mm-hmm. So it just keeps that weight. You know, if you're, you know, you can, this one might have 3A sounds if I was out in a little bit deeper water targeting, you know, suspended fish. And then you have.
So you want the heavier weight is on the bottom.
Yeah, the right? Two on the bottom are heavier.
Okay.
And then the middle and the top two, if you can use five, are lighter. And I just use 3/16 and quarters on the bottom.
Okay. That makes
you
sense.
You cannot use a light wire hook. I mean, these I make.
Okay.
These are all, it's kind of weird when you get jig hooks, like Gamagatsu sizes 3/0 and 4/0 are different than Mustad's 3/0 and 4/0. You know, I've got Gamagatsu ones that I'll use with 1½-inch, 2-inch baits. Cause I mean, they're a strong hook, they're sharp, and they're, you know, they're smaller. You can use a 4/0 hook on a 2-inch bait, but owners, you know, the extra heavy owner hooks, they're a little smaller, you know? So these are, okay. This is an owner 3/0, you know, and a 3/0 Gamagatsu would be half this size, you know, and you want a wider gap. You want to at least have a wider gap in the hook. But these, and I always throw blades. I hear people like, I'll never throw blades. You don't need to throw blades. It just gives it more flair. Mm-hmm. You know, we got gold blades for muddier water, dirty water, you know, but silver blades. Mm-hmm. I don't get carried away with what color should I have my heads. They could either be just lead color,
okay,
or white.
All right. Good to know. That's good. So you just want either bait fish or just a lead color.
Yeah.
Blades. So you're throwing blades pretty much all the time, regardless of conditions.
Every time I throw it, it has a blade on it.
Okay, good. Now you mentioned size 3 blades. Is that your go-to blades for the main, you know, some different A rigs have different contraptions. I've seen smaller blades and a bigger blade on it. Does that particular one you were just showing up, those are size 3 blades?
Yeah. These are all size 3s.
Okay. Willow blades. And- yep.
Yeah, the littler blades, because if you go to a 3½, it just has more pull on it and it's going to want to, you know, it's good if you're going to be shallow water. Say you go to Oneida and you're going to fish right on top of those islands. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're in 2 foot of water. Then that'd be great because, you know, it's going to want to come up and stay up. You know, you're not dragging it through the rocks. But as soon as you get out in, you know, 10, 12 foot of water and you want to be closer towards the bottom of the rock and rip it through the grass, you don't want that bait to start to rise as you're reeling it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You would just have to slow, you know, you'd have to really, you know, slow down your reel, and it's just the 3 is the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Are you concerned in a body of water where you can only have 3 hooks? Are you really concerned that you can't have 5? Not a big deal.
No, because I fished tournaments on Champlain where I've done the one tournament. There was actually a tournament that I practiced that I'm like, this is over. I'm winning. I mean, I was catching at will 23, 24 pounds of smallmouth. And you might've fished that event and it was 85 degrees all practice. And then we had a north wind the first day of the tournament. There's 4-footers. You know, and we come up, that water temperature dropped like 8 degrees, and I got them on a spy bait. I got them on top water. I got a Senko. They wouldn't touch the A-rig. Hmm. It was just crazy. But I mean, I caught a few on it, but it wasn't like in practice. I mean, I thought I was going to win, mm-hmm. but I won practice though. I know that.
Yep.
you know. So, but it's for them now on Champlain, you can only use two hooks in Vermont, and it doesn't even matter. You know what I like to do too is when you have the two hooks, I'll have the three on there for the weight, so it's still the same. I'll keep that jig hook in the middle, and I thread it on my bait, and it's super glued. I just cut the hook off. Mm-hmm. So I still have that weight. Mm-hmm. So the bait's a little bit heavier.
Yes.
So you're still biting. Yeah.
Okay.
Instead of just putting a dummy, you know, I just cut the hook off.
I guess the next thing we need to know from you would be baits, right? That's really important. What kind of plastics you're going to be putting on that. What brands and kind of,
I mainly throw Kytec on everything, but I do like OptiShad. Optimum Baits makes an OptiShad, mm-hmm. a 2-inch bait that
okay.
is out of this world. You can put 5 of them on there and fish all day long. Catch 30, 40 fish and not change them. Maybe they bite, if a walleye bites his tail off of one, but they're very sturdy. They got great action. But in this, you know, spring or early summer, I'll use them tiny little OptiShad 2-inch baits. The 2.8s are good for with the Kytec, but I like to go smaller and I use the Optimum Baits, the OptiShad. And then for, once it gets summertime or fall, then I always used to use 3.8, mm-hmm. but I started having a lot better luck with 3.3.
I agree.
So downsized my swim baits to a 3.3. And then if you got to use a dummy, then I'll just use a 2.8. A lot of times I will put a different color one in the middle. Mm-hmm. All my 4 around would be the same. And then I'll put just a different color.
Are you doing anything crazy as far as color or pretty standard, you know, bait fish, natural looking swim baits?
Yeah, I just like Tennessee shad or, you know, and sexy shad, any of the bait fish looking colors. And then like maybe the one in the center, I might use that electric blue chartreuse.
Yep.
Yeah. Just a little off the wall, something in the middle, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but it's like I said, it's all about, especially when you're reeling it in and you're, you know, I always, as I cast it out, like at the bottom, I'm reeling it in. I start reeling. I give that rod a nice jerk, get those baits moving, straighten out. As you start to reel it, as I'm reeling, I'll flare that reel, which will cause that thing to just, it'll jump like that. And I'll twitch that rod tip, reel it. I'm always reeling it like I think one's behind it.
Yes. Good, good,
you
know, good.
Now, if I'm fishing deep water and you're drifting and you see a bunch of suspended fish, so you're casting out there, you're letting it drop. You're in 50 foot of water. You're letting it drop to like 20 and you're reeling it and you get nothing. Then, you know, how you see on your graph, you'll see the fish start to show up on your, mm-hmm. on your sonar. So I get it back in, I'll whip it back out there, let it get down there. So then I'll reel, then I'll kind of like estimate as you're drifting, you're like, okay, my bait's going to be right near them. I might give it a couple of jerks like that, stop it, let it go down, reel it again, give it. So now you think you're right where them fish are and they'll hit it every time. They got no choice. They don't see that. And they're just like, I'm eating that thing. Oh, I mean, I catch a ton of walleye like that too.
This got me fired up. The viewers, listeners, I'm sure they appreciate this information. They're taking notes as well. A lot of good stuff. Let's talk about the retrieves. So standard retrieve in a lot of people's mind, you throw it out there and you reel it in and it does work. There's situations where that retrieve works, but it sounds like you really are implementing a lot of action in that retrieve, varying the speeds, almost like how sometimes you'd work a spinner bait for largemouth in areas where you like to give it that little or chatterbait or whatever the bait. You just want to get that reaction because there may be a fish following that, and smallmouth are notorious for this. They'll just follow it until something changes in that action, and that's when you're going to get those bites. Can you walk me through your most popular retrieve as well as maybe a couple retrieves that you've seen work or that you might mix into it under certain conditions?
I mean, my biggest thing is I'll throw it out there. If I'm fishing 10 to 12 foot, I'll find my isolated rock piles and then I'll work my way up toward it. So I'll cast and I'll make sure I'm either going past it or landing to it. So I'm, mm-hmm. not just aimlessly casting flats, you know, unless you're just searching for stuff, you know, unless you, if you got an area that you, you know, I got piles of rocks here, there's some here, there's a big boulder there, you cast towards it, you know, let it get down, you start, you know, I jerk it right off the bat, I jerk that rod, get them baits to stand up, if they're bent or anything, it causes it to stay, you know, the way you want it, and then you just start, as soon as I start reeling it, I'll flare that reel like that, just reel like this, as I'm reeling it, just a quick flare, reeling it slow, quick flare. Mm-hmm. As I could be reeling it, just jerk that rod tip like that. But I'm always have my rod tip down.
Rod tip down. Okay.
Yeah. And I'll just reel and I'll just like that. Just keep reeling it. Jerk that rod like that. And that's all I do. Because I'm always twitching it like every 10, 15 seconds. Because I'm thinking, okay, there's a fish. Oh, a fish just came behind it now, you know. Mm-hmm. And if one's behind it and I do that, he's eating it. Mm-hmm. You know, because they see it jump and they're like, you know, they lose their mind and they just go, I got, now it's taken off. I got to get it.
So you mentioned earlier in the show, you had co-anglers and other people in your boat that struggled with that A-rig. What's the biggest mistake do you think people make or that you actually see and be like, man, I don't know if I would be doing it that way?
Well, a lot of people don't have confidence in it like I do. I mean, they're like, well, you know, I've never really caught anything on this thing. You know, people that I've shown and taught how to use it, that's all they'll take now. I mean, there's a few guys that I've taught what to do that you got to throw this, man. I'm telling you. And, after years of me telling them, you need to start doing this. Mm-hmm. They're catching some good fish on it. You know, tons of big largemouth on it. You'll catch a lot of big largemouth on it deep. They just can't, I mean, it's stuff they don't see, you know? So once that, if you can work that lure and have confidence and get it in that strike zone, they're biting it. You know, I mean, I've caught doubles and triple largemouth. I mean, I've got I had a 6 and a 5.5 pound smallmouth. I've caught 4 smallmouth multiple times, 3s, like, no, you know, especially when I catch one, I let them go back down. Mm-hmm. Then the other ones jump on, and then it's just like, oh, there we go.
Right.
Nobody's jumping. Just scoop them up. There's my limit.
Man. Jeez. So when do you know, like, to put it down?
I don't. I mean, like, but when I'm fishing offshore deep, mm-hmm. I'm going to be drop shotting. You know, I'll be using, you know, my spinning tackle and stuff like that. But as soon as I mark anything suspended, I'll take a cast at it or two, mm-hmm. because a lot of times that's a big, especially one fish. That's a big smallmouth. Mm-hmm. If he's cruising around chasing bait and he's all by himself, and I always have it on my deck, I'm like, well, I'm going to throw it down there. He's, you know, 10 foot off the bottom. And I've caught so many roamers like that because mm-hmm. they might be keying in on one piece of bait or something. And they see this thing going, like, whoa, look at that. And they just swim over and they just destroy it. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, the deeper water fishing, it's you just can't really use it that much. But it's hard for me to put down. Like if I go elsewhere, if I go to shallower lakes, Cayuga, I'll throw it, mm-hmm. religiously throw it. I mean, I know there's times they're not going to bite it. And I mean, I'll throw a Senko. I'll throw a, you know, a topwater. I love throwing a jackhammer, chatterbait. I mean, I'm pretty versatile, but it, you know, I might be throwing all this other stuff, but I'm like, man, I wish they'd hit this. Mm.
Now, you mentioned sometimes you'll have multiple rods on the deck. Is that different configurations or is it more, I guess, why do you do that?
Well, I've broken them off before because you get excited, especially you get a school of fish. You know, you're like, oh, I'm going to make a cast. Mm-hmm. And then you cast the things wrapped around the tip, snaps it off. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's a pain to retie it, get, you know, now yes. You got to get 5 okay. jig heads out. Put yep. it all building it. So I'm like, well,
you just have one ready to go. Yeah.
Right. Or you're yep. in a tournament, arm's too bent, and you're like, if I keep bending this back, mm-hmm. a fish might break it off. Yep. I'm just going to grab my other rod.
Okay.
And just start using that.
Okay. All right. I wasn't sure if you sometimes had the finesse and then the bigger one ready to go, but it sounds like that finesse really is truly early in the year. That's when you're going to pick that up.
Right? This way you can use that, the smaller baits on it.
Baits. Okay. Okay.
I mean, if you look at the two sizes, the finesse and the junior, I mean, that this one's the finesse. It's kind of hard to see on here. And yep. so these arms are maybe an inch longer on the junior than it is the finesse. I mean, it's not, I mean, this is a really tight ball, mm-hmm. you know, and this, but a lot of the other ones, these arms are maybe 4.5 inches, five, a lot of people have 7-inch arms, or the standard might be 7. I like it close. I like it closer together. You know, I want that to be more compact mm-hmm. than, you know, down south, you have largemouth, you had 8 and 10 pounders and you got to use 6-inch baits on there. That's, you know, that's for here. I think,
okay.
Yeah. I think here it's just the smaller, you know, that the junior's great, but in the spring when the water's colder and that bait fish is tiny, mm-hmm. I use the junior.
Okay. The finesse. Okay. A couple things. I got to ask retrieve wise. We know you're implementing some action. We talked about that, but are you ever, I guess we'll call it slow rolling. Let's call it slow rolling, medium retrieve, and then burning. Do you implement all three of those at all during certain situations or?
The only
or
time not? I'll burn it is if it's shallow and I would just want to keep it out of the rocks. Then I'll burn it. I will slow roll it, you know, 10, 15 foot of water, maybe 20 foot of water for largemouth. I will slow roll it. Let it get right to the bottom, pop that, and then just, but the key with doing that is you got to have a reel that can cast far. Because the deeper the water you are, once that goes down, you start reeling it, it's going to want to come up. So the shorter your cast, you're on the bottom, what, 10 feet? Now it's coming up. Mm-hmm. So if your fish ain't there in 10 feet, you're done. So
super low. Okay.
So you want to be way out, let it go as you're going. You might be covering 50 foot of the bottom before it starts to want to come up.
Let me give you a couple scenarios. Let's start with Great Lakes. So clear water. We're in 10, 15 feet of water, maybe off of a drop. Okay. Fishing an underwater point, let's say. And we know there's some fish out there. Are you concerned? You're throwing that A rig. You're doing your standard, your retrieve where you're implementing some action, just kind of you're not burning it. You're not crawling it. You're going through the water column. That bait is down 10 feet, let's say over 15 or 20. Are those fish coming up?
They come right up.
So you don't necessarily have to be a foot off the bottom at all times.
Oh, in that clear water, they see that they come right. They race right. See the way, like, I don't give my secret away, but on like Erie or, you know, any of the Great Lakes, I'll find rock piles. You'll have big rock piles that might be 12 foot at the top and surrounded by 30 feet. So I know where all them spots are. So I start working my way towards them casting. So I know I'm casting and it might go over it and I'm in 30 foot of water and I start reeling it and I'll pop it, but I'll be going across that 10 or 12 foot hump.
Yes.
And them fish are either on top of it or they're not. And if they are, they're coming up and they're blasting it, mm-hmm. you know? So when I throw it out there, I might let it sink 3 or 4 seconds, you know? So it's probably 4 or 5 feet down. And then I just pop that and start reeling, you know? And I think I'm getting close to that dark spot. You might be able to see it, you know, pop it. They just, my stepson calls them black torpedoes. Because mm-hmm. in that clear water, you just see this black torpedo I mean, they'll come from a far away and he's like, oh my God, look at that torpedo's coming. Just keep reeling it. And then all of a sudden it's a 6-pounder just destroys it.
Sure.
Yeah. They see it from a long way.
Any tricks you can give us when you do see one following it, what are you doing when you actually have a visual, you made that long cast, you see that.
I'll pop it as I'm reeling in and I see them, right. I'll give it a couple pops. Okay. Then I start reeling. Normally they'll just grab it. They'll just turn and grab it and go. If they don't, if they follow, I mean, I caught a 6.5 with him with the net. He followed it in, just sat there. Mm-hmm. Took the med rig. I always have it ready. Mm-hmm. Drop it. He went right down. He's like, oh, I'll eat this.
Yep.
Ate that. Caught him.
Having a backup, if you do see those fish, something finesse, you can pitch right to it. Because now, you know, one of the main reasons that the A-rig does put good fish in the boat is because it's a search bait. It because it can locate these roamers, individual fish, or even schools. I mean, it is a well-rounded bait, no doubt.
At Bassmasters, I fished. Before it was official practice, I fished a Cash and Rods tournament with my buddy on Oneida. And we caught maybe 100 smallmouth in an area. We didn't win. We had like 18 some pounds, you know, 20 some pounds of largemouth, but we had fun. You know, it's hard. I know I was going to win, but I wasn't leaving. We were just having too much fun catching them.
Yeah.
So the next day was, it was a Saturday. So Sunday, official practice didn't start till Monday. So it was, and you can't use the A-rig in Bassmaster. So me and my buddy are like, we're fishing as the boaters. We're like, we're going to go to that spot where you caught them. No A-rig, and we'll catch. Hour we fished. I threw Senko. I threw topwater. Nice, perfect day. First thing in the morning, never got a bite. And he's like, we're not taking the A-rig rods because we can't use them. Leave them at home. And because we know you're going to want to throw it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right. I'm like, he's like, well, they're gone. Well, they ain't gone. They're there. I know they're there. I'm building an A-rig. So I had my flipping stick, whatever. So I make one up, haul it out there.
Got him.
Bam. 4.5. Mm-hmm. Haul back out there. Whoa. Double header.
Jeez.
Put it down. Couldn't get them to bite. Then I figured out if you can find a school of fish, I like throwing a Carolina rig. Mm-hmm. But I like to throw a Carolina rig like a crankbait. I'll whip it out there as far as I can, and I'll reel that slow. Just nonstop reeling. Mm-hmm. And I'll use a lizard. Mm-hmm. And it'll just swim. And you just don't stop reeling it. Just reel. All of a sudden, you'll feel that tit-tit-tit-tit. Boom. They just grab it. Wow. Done.
Yeah.
So, and I'll throw a Carolina rig just like a crankbait. Just, mm-hmm. But can't use glass beads or nothing because they clang together and they chip and they nick your line. So you can't do any of that stuff. But classic, so that's when I went back there. I caught him on a drop shot for the tournament and then the Carolina rig. Mm-hmm.
Man.
But I would like to catch him on the A-rig. They wouldn't let me.
Sounds like it. Yeah. I'm glad maybe that they don't allow it because guys like you would kick my butt if I got that drop shot in my hand at times, man. Dang. That's
fun.
It is. It got me excited. I'm going to throw it more often. It's definitely intriguing listening to you, the stories and how you work it. You know, bottom line, you have confidence in it. You throw it a lot, and that's what allows you to really get that bait dialed in. It's time spent with the bait under all these different conditions, knowing when to throw it, when not to. And
me and Fonzie were fishing out on a tournament on Thousand Islands, and we were out there at team event, and we were fishing deep. It wasn't a good event for us. And I'm like, we gotta be shallow. Let's go shallow. So I pull out the rig and I'm hauling it around. You know, we're in like 15 foot of water. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, look at that one. It's following it in. Fonzie's like, that ain't a bass. That's a carp. It's giant. Uh-huh. He gets right to the boat. He's like, whoa, that's the biggest bass I've ever seen. It's probably 7 or 8 pounds. I mean, just ignore, just followed it right in. And I threw a net rig at it, everything. And he's just like, nah, I just swam away. It was a giant.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, but it's a thing that you have to really work, you know, start using, make yourself use it and make it work for you. Mm-hmm. You know, I put a lot of action into it. You know, I call it, you know, when we first started using it, you know, my buddy's like, well, I'm gonna throw a spinnerbait. I'm like, why are you throwing a spinnerbait? Why throw one when you can throw five? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm throwing five spinnerbaits basically. So, you know, and I work it and use it, you know, and how I got the feel for if I'm hitting the grass and the rocks, you know, how much you want to keep it up. But then I learned with the long casts, keeping it down in the deeper water, you know, all that plays an effect.
Well, how do we keep them from getting tangled up when we are going to use them in a tournament? You're making a run and it's in your rod locker on the deck or whatever, man. It's a pain. Do you got any tricks for us with that?
Well, when I stop and then I swear a lot when I'm trying to get them undone. No,
right. There is.
I mean, it hooks everything before you get it off your reel to cast. Mm-hmm. You got it hooked in your hand, your rain suit, your pants, the other rods and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's, you know,
I tried the sleeves or, you know, a Velcro, I guess some type of fabric where you can put them in. I find that helps a little bit. But here's another.
I just don't like bending. I don't like bending them down and then
agree
every time flaring them back out. I like to just deal with it. You know, they're getting hooked on stuff because they catch fish. So I'll just, it's my favorite thing. So I'll just unhook it from everything and yell at it a few times. But
yeah. Well, listen, I always have one rigged up as well in my rod locker. And then about a month later, I organize it and all the hooks are salted up and rusty. So, you know, I don't know.
No, I'll tell you what, you spend a lot of time using it and you start doing a little more with it. It's hard to put down.
Yeah.
I'll take you out one time and
it's over.
It's done.
All right. I'm in. All right. Before we end this, we got a couple other questions I like to ask our guests every time that they come on. Larry, I got to know, what's your biggest smallmouth, your personal best smallmouth, and give us a little story behind it.
Biggest smallmouth is 792. Hmm. Almost the state record, 8.4 for Erie. Just out practicing for a Costa event on Erie and just caught a giant. I used to catch a lot of fish in real, real deep water in the area. And it just, no bait goes there now. And they just, I mean, and talking 75, 80 foot of water, giant fish. Just, I mean, I'd pull in there and in five drops, I'd leave with 28 pounds.
Jeez.
It's dumb, you know, and it's just, that area is just, that's, I think, changed. It's backfilled with a lot of the current shifts and stuff. And I think all those boulders and all that stuff gets silted in with the zebra mussel shells. And then I don't think the bait comes back. You know, so you just got to find newer piles of rocks. But
was that a drop shot fish then?
Yeah, drop shot. Yeah. I mean, I love catching them on a drop shot. They, you know, especially them deep water fish, used like the Costa series that I won on Erie. I had my coing over me. I'm like, when you set the hook on these fish, they're coming to the top. Mm-hmm. You're going to think they're gone, but yes, they're not.
Yep.
You have to reel it hard. You can't even keep up with it, mm-hmm. you know? So and this was another guy that knew everything. So I had five fish and then he's had nothing. Mm-hmm. So I'm catching them. So then I'm like, dude, just use this bait. I gave him a rod and everything. And I'm the crosstail shad, drop this thing down there. All right. All right. I said, all right, set the hook. You got one. He's like, no, I don't have it. I'm like, dude, I could see your rod. You got one. He sets it, just stops. I'm like, start reeling. So he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, reel. He's like, there's nothing on there. I go, it's coming up. So then it jumps out of the water.
Yep.
It's giant. It's like a 5.5. Takes his rod, slams it in the water, which is my rod. And he's like, oh, he's gone. I'm like, dude, it ain't gone. Get up. So I grab him, you know, and I'm pulling him up. And all of a sudden it catches, the line gets tight and starts peeling, you know, and it's dragged, the drag's too tight. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, loosen your drag. And he's got his rod and the whole reel in the water. And then we finally get it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen,
and then he ended up getting 25 pounds.
Uh huh.
Yeah, he was happy.
Drop shot in deep water, big smallmouth. There in every Great Lake, and I don't know if you noticed this, but every Great Lake seems those fish fight just a little bit different, and even inland bodies of water. You're right though on Erie, those deeper fish, man, they're coming up. And you know what? If you're in a team event, here's just a quick tip that I'd like to share because it does save your butt at times. When your partner hooks up on a deep drop fish, you get up there with the net instantly because you might have a 2-second window, right? You know where I'm going with this, where you can scoop that fish before you have to sit there and let it dig for 10 minutes.
Oh yeah. Like perfect example. I love throwing a jig and spoon for deep fish and a Hopkins jig and spoon. Little trick. You lose a lot of them because that spoon's 1 ounce. Fish comes jumping. The 1 ounce spoon flares back and forth and rips the hook out of his face. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I have a big Swiss split ring, ball bearing swivel. I take another treble hook and I put it on top of my spoon. So when I set the hook on one, he turns and shakes. It hits him on the side of the face, that other hook, mm-hmm. and it grabs him by his gill plate. So now his mouth is open and he can't shake. So now he's pinned and he's done. Mm. So last year I was fishing just a fun tournament and I had my nephew with me and I'm like, there's fish down there. They're not biting. I'm like, I'm going to throw this spoon down there. I'm like, I don't have the hook on the top of it. Uh-huh. I'm just going to catch sheephead anyways. You know, it's summertime. They love that thing. I drop it down, jerk it up, drop it down. Rod folds in half. He comes out, jumps crazy. 7-pounder, if not bigger, crazy. Comes back, goes back down. I'm like, get over here with the net. I go, we got one chance. He's coming back up. We ain't going to get him if you don't scoop him. And right by the boat, flies out of water, shakes. He had first broke my NRX because he had the net in the rod tip, snapped it over, and then missed the fish, and he was gone. He's like, how'd you know you were going to lose him? I'm like, them big fish, you got one shot. Mm. They come up, they're gone.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's why, I mean, I don't know if you do that with a jig and spoon, but I always put that hook on the top of it.
No, I'm going to talk to you about that off air for sure. Okay. Sorry, guys. is that normally if you're using like a 1 ounce spoon or bigger, or do you use a
1 ounce? I just do it. It just pins to them, and it keeps the bait from flopping around. That's all, because flopping back and forth causes it to rip itself out. Mm-hmm. And when the smallmouth is just going crazy on top of the water, it's eventually going to pull the hooks out of its face.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So absolutely. That keeps it from doing that. And you have to be careful because that hook's on there when you go to unhook them, that you don't get the top hook in your hand like I've had happen.
Yes.
Because you forget it's there.
All right. Last question. This might be, I'm really interested in the answer here because there's a couple scenarios that we can play around with. But rule number one, I'm going to give you one bait to use for the rest of the year. For 1 year, that's all you can throw is one bait, not technique bait. But in your situation, I'll allow you to have five of these baits if it's going to apply to this application. Maybe it won't. Maybe you're going to tell me something totally different. But if you could only have one bait to use for smallmouth for the year, what bait are you choosing? You will. And you're going to throw an A-rig. Yes.
I throw an A-rig.
Okay. Wow.
All year. And like I said, you come with me one time and you'll know.
Uh-huh.
It's dumb. When my 12-year-old stepson catches giant fish on an A-rig, it's at one after another. I mean, he lights them up on it. It's, but he does what I tell him, He's a good learner.
Good stuff. Good stuff, Larry. First of all, thank you for coming on the podcast and talking and sharing these secrets. I know our listeners and viewers probably found a lot of valuable information, a lot of good nuggets here when it comes to throwing an Alabama rig. How can people follow you and kind of keep up with what you're doing, whether it be in tournaments, things like that, social media, anything like that you got going on?
Instagram, just Larry Mazur Fishing.
Okay.
So it's Larry _ Mazur, Mazur Fishing on Instagram. Okay. So all fishing related. That's, I'm going to be doing a lot of tournaments this year, depending on what, if they let us go across the border. I do a lot of stuff in Canada, on Kingston, the Thousand Islands Open, Bassmasters, it's the Phoenix Series now.
Yep.
So a lot of stuff on Lake Erie.
Yeah.
Douglas Rod, Big Money Opens, Cashing Rods.
Yeah. No, we might have to have you back for season two if we decide to continue these podcasts in 2022, because you got a lot to offer, man. You got a lot going on. This was some good stuff. Well, listen, thanks again for coming on, Larry. We wish you the best of luck in the future with that.
Thank you too. I sure where our paths will be crossing for sure.
Oh, absolutely. All right, guys. Well, thank you for hanging out with us. And as always, until next time, we'll see you on the water.
Thanks so much for listening today. Make sure that you're subscribed to the show and follow us on Instagram at Smallmouth Crush. Also, the YouTube channel, Smallmouth Crush. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and comment with a review below. And as always, until next time, we'll see you on the water.